Salam. Hello, I'm Paul. I'll be your host as we explore the history of Northeast Africa from 1270 to the present. This won't be the simple one-episode introduction I'd planned all along. Today I'll just talk about geography, ethnicity, and language. I'll introduce some ethnic terminology, and I'll conclude by discussing changes to the podcast itself, which you won't want to miss. There's two competing narratives about the events of 1270 AD, the replacement of one dynasty by another in northern Ethiopia. In the next two episodes, I'll tell you about the history as historians understand it. But for over 1,000 years, there's been a far more influential narrative about 1270. Called a myth or a legend, the other story of 1270 involves ancient Ethiopia, not Ethiopia in the 13th century. I tried to explain it all at once, but it just wasn't working. Instead, I'll start with a geography lesson. I'll tell you the where, then I'll tell you about language, religion, and ethnic identity. Next time, I'll talk about the first major kingdom you should know about, a city-state turned empire called Aksum. The successors of Aksum were a dynasty called the Zagwe, the subject of the episodes after that. The final Zagwe monarch, Yetbarak, was overthrown in 1270 AD. So the fall of the Zagwe and the rise of a new emperor called Yekuno Amlak will be the subject of the third episode. Then, and only then, can I finally explain the whole business with the year 1270. I should have picked a better title. So, what's the Horn of Africa? Well, technically, it's a peninsula. One of my books calls it, quote, "a vast peninsula which juts out between the Indian Ocean and the Gulf of Aden," unquote. The Encyclopedia Ethiopica says it extends, quote, "for hundreds of kilometers into the Arabian Sea, between the Gulf of Aden in the north and the Indian Ocean to the south, as the easternmost projection of the African continent," unquote. But these days it's more often used as, quote, "an alternative or sometimes parallel designation for Northeast Africa," unquote. Northeast Africa has four countries: Somalia, Djibouti, Eritrea, and Ethiopia. Eritrea's northwest of Somalia along the Red Sea. Ethiopia is Somalia's landlocked neighbor to the west. Djibouti's in the middle by the Gulf of Tadjoura, directly across from Yemen and Saudi Arabia. The Horn is big. From north to south, it's 1,300 miles between the northernmost point in Eritrea and the southernmost point in Somalia. Somalia's about as long as the eastern United States from New Hampshire to Florida. It's another 1,300 miles between the westernmost point in Ethiopia and the easternmost point in Somalia. Almost the entire region sits atop the gigantic Ethio-Eritrean Plateau. It's more often called the Ethiopian Highlands, sometimes also the Roof of Africa by analogy with Tibet. Ethiopia and Eritrea are Afro-montane, that is, cool and mountainous. Somalia and Djibouti, meanwhile, are hot and mountainous. In Ethiopia slash Eritrea, the lowlands are desert or semi-desert. Lowland Eritrea has a hot semi-arid climate. Southern Highland Eritrea and Northern Highland Ethiopia are cooler, but not cold. Even at the highest elevations, snow is rare to non-existent. The Red Sea coast of southern Eritrea features, quote, "hills with sparse bushes merging into the endless plains of boulders and salt of the Danakil Desert," unquote. Adjacent coastal areas of Somalia and Djibouti are rugged and scorchingly hot. Djibouti is so arid that 19th century Europeans called it the Valley of Hell. It is, quote, a land of permanent intense heat and drought, unquote. Somali speakers in Djibouti and northern Somalia call the coast Gabon, which means burnt land. It's somewhat cooler in Somalia's mountains and plateau. Some of the hottest places on Earth are found along the border between what's now eastern Ethiopia and Djibouti. Between the port of Zeila and the Somali region of Ethiopia, there's, quote, nothing but water and trackless desert for 3 weeks' march, unquote. Northeast Africa is diverse, with about 75 ethnicities in Ethiopia alone. In Ethiopia and Eritrea, the highland-lowland distinction is just one of the main things that defines a so-called horner, that's any person from Northeast Africa. Two other dividing lines, which will come up again and again, are language and religion. The Abrahamic religions, Judaism, Christianity, Islam, have been the main religions in Northeast Africa for millennia. The Ethiopian Orthodox Tewahedo Church claims to be the oldest established church in the world. Islam arrived in Ethiopia during the period immediately after Muhammad's death. Ethiopian Jews, known as the Beta Israel, claim to be older still. The word Beta here isn't the second letter of the Greek alphabet. It comes from a root meaning house. Hence, they're the House of Israel. Language is the third characteristic of Horner identity. Linguists categorize languages into families, which in turn have branches. Two of Africa's four largest language families are found in Northeast Africa, Ethio-Semitic languages and Cushitic languages. Ethio-Semitic languages are more dominant in Ethiopia / Eritrea, while Cushitic languages are more common in Somalia / Djibouti. Arabic and Hebrew, which are from a different part of the Semitic branch, are also significant. As the anthropologist Jared Diamond once put it, quote, Africa gave birth to the languages spoken by the authors of the Old and New Testament and the Quran, unquote. Arabic is widely spoken in and around the Horn. Arabic is the main language of nearby Yemen, Egypt, Sudan, South Sudan, and Saudi Arabia. It's one of the main languages in Djibouti and Somalia, too. It's not just a Muslim language, either. Christian Arabic from Egypt was an important source of ideas that influenced Ethio-Eritrean Christian literature. Arabic is also spoken in Israel / Palestine, including the city of Jerusalem. Jerusalem is very important to Ethio-Eritrean Christianity, and Horner Christians have gone on pilgrimages to Jerusalem for millennia. Hebrew is of course important to the Beta Israel, although less so than you might think. The Beta Israel tended to use other sacred languages like Ge'ez. Many Beta Israel didn't speak Hebrew until modern times. Ethiopian and Eritrean history is dominated by Christian Highlanders who speak one of four Ethio-Semitic languages, Ge'ez, Amharic, Tigrinya, and Tigre. Proto-Semitic, the proto-language which later split into Arabic, Hebrew, Ethio-Semitic, etc., may even have originated in the highlands. It's the opposite of the former belief that Semitic was imported into Northeast Africa by ancient Yemenis. This older idea implied that prehistoric Northeast Africans were somehow incapable of linguistic innovation. Apparently, it's not always obvious to historians if a given group of people mentioned in their sources are a people or merely are individuals who shared the same language. Speakers of so-and-so language often become so-and-so people over time. For instance, speakers of Tigrenya live in the Tigray region. They sometimes call themselves Tigrayans in English. They aren't to be confused with the similarly named Tigre, spelled T-I-G-R-E. Somalia and Djibouti are mostly Muslim and Cushitic speaking. Cushitic includes major languages like Somali, Oromo, and Afar. Somali is spoken throughout Northeast Africa from Djibouti to northern Kenya. Afar is spoken in Ethiopia, Eritrea, and Djibouti. The Oromo are the largest single ethnic group in Ethiopia. They're also the largest Cushitic-speaking group, with more speakers than Somali. The Oromo language is the second largest language in all of Africa. Until the 18th century, most Oromo practiced their own unique form of monotheism, unrelated to the Abrahamic faiths. But today, most are either Christian or Muslim. It may be a while before the Oromo come up again, but they'll play an important role after a certain point. Now, I've said Ethiopia and Eritrea a lot. Ethio-Semitic-speaking Orthodox Christian Highlanders are dominant in both countries. The word Habesha used to be a catch-all ethnic term for them, especially for Amharas and Tigrayans. The Orthodox Church in both countries is called Tewahedo Orthodox. The word means something like being made one. It'll come up in later episodes, don't worry. The Eritrean Orthodox Tewahedo Church didn't split from the Ethiopian Orthodox Tewahedo Church until 1999. In the 20th and 21st centuries, Habesha has been used to lump together all Ethiopians and Eritreans, whether they liked it or not. It was imposed from above by the former Ethiopian Empire. Habesha elites forced Habesha culture onto all their subjects, highlanders and lowlanders alike. People were forced to speak Habesha languages like Ge'ez and Amharic and forcibly converted to Orthodox Tewahedo Christianity. For these reasons, many groups that were oppressed by the Ethiopian Empire, like the Oromo or the Djiberti, still dislike the word to this day. I'll be using it anyway for the sake of convenience, but I'll use it with caution, and so should you. My Twitter username uses the Latin word Ethiopia as a synonym for the older sense of Habesha. The lila ending means little. I'll be changing it soon anyway, so don't worry about it. And speaking of Twitter, by the way, it's time to wrap up, but not yet. Podcast on Spotify and elsewhere, courtesy of anchor.fm. Find it at anchor.fm/HOAPod-1270. That's lowercase HOAPod-1270. As an avid listener of podcasts myself, I often skip the part at the end where they talk about the Patreon. But I work at a warehouse, I make $12 an hour, and I've already spent almost $500 on the Encyclopedia Ethiopica. That's not counting the mic, the subscription to WordPress, or the 100 other small expenses in order to launch a history podcast. Please help me pay my bills by donating to the Patreon, which you'll find at patreon.com/HOAPod_1270. The podcast schedule, Patreon tiers, and Patreon benefits have all changed. By the time this episode drops, I'll have added a $5 tier and renamed both. $3 Lick, or Scholar patrons, will just get access to episode transcripts with end notes as soon as an episode is posted. But you deserve better. For only $5, each Licka Lickawant, or Head of the Scholars, will get exclusive access to interview episodes as soon as the first one's scheduled. You can expect the first interview episode around the first Monday in August. After that, I'll post a new interview maybe every other week. And by the way, do you like novels? Because each Licka Lickawent patron will gain access to a list of every novel I own. Just PM me on Patreon and I'll mail you a novel every month. No extra charges until I run out of novels. $5 Licka Lickawent patrons will also gain access to anything else I may write in the future, which could be anything from a book review to a poem. If you want to follow the podcast for updates, you'll find it on Twitter at HOAPod_1270. That's capital H, lowercase o, capital A, pod, underscore, 1270. I'll be occasionally posting content to the blog. Find it at hornofafricasince1270.com. One word, all lowercase, no spaces. By all means, please get in touch. Please use the contact form at tinyurl.com/HOAPod-1270. You can also email me at hornofafricasince1270@gmail.com. You might DM me on Twitter, but I won't always respond. I'd love to hear your hot takes, especially as we get closer to the 20th century, and I'd like to hear from experts who are interested in being interviewed. I'd appreciate somebody who could help me with the pronunciation of Ge'ez names using the Encyclopedia Ethiopica transcription system. I'm looking for potential advertisers with a connection to the region, like, for instance, publishers with a focus on Northeast Africa, or grad programs. I'm also into food. Let me know if you sell tej, coffee, injera, or other food from the Horn. I'd even review one of Boston's Ethiopian restaurants once I'm able to go to Boston. I couldn't do this without lots of help. The theme song is Snow in Aksum by Mild Sorcery Effects. Listen to his music at mildsorceryeffects.bandcamp.com. The show is edited by my comrades at the Literal Fiction Book Club, another Anchor podcast. You can thank them by going to anchor.fm/literal-fiction-book-club. The show logo and banner are by Julian Rimmer. You can find Julian's website at irulan.media. That's irulan.media. The logo's font is Amhara, A-M-H-A-R-A, by Ingo Zimmerman. You can buy it at FontSpring. You might also check out Godole, a free font by Andreas Larson that I downloaded for my own use. Check it out at godole.github.io. That's GIDOLE.github.io. I wouldn't have been able to write this without the first chapter of Abyssinia's Samuel Johnson by Wendy Laura Belcher, Oxford, 2012. It proved indispensable. Sorry for the delays. As always, thank you for listening. I'll talk to you again soon. Next time on The Horn of Africa Since 1270.